This episode is sponsored by Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, and Ashley and I can definitely personally vouch for this. First of all, it saves you a bunch of time, so we don't really talk about this, but Ashley and I both have full-time jobs, and we don't really live close by each other, so we just get together once a week, every week, and talk about our podcast, and Anchor.fm helps us a lot to get everything out there and ready to go for you all to listen to with not a lot of time needed. So first of all, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. There are also creation tools right in Anchor that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or from your computer.
Also, Anchor is free, and even though you don't have to pay any money, it actually allows you to make money from your own podcast even without a minimum number of listeners. It's everything you could possibly need to make a podcast for free in one place.
So if you can't already tell, we both love Anchor. And if you're interested in starting a podcast of your own, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hi, listeners, and welcome to Above the Wing, a podcast to bring together all aspects of the aviation community, including engineers, journalists, mechanics, pilots, and even casual hobbyists. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley. We'll talk about all things aviation, from current events to new products and airplanes to industry trends and everything in between. Looking at our first in the news headline this week, the first one is focused on the Super Bowl. The FAA has recently announced their plans for Super Bowl Sunday happening this year in Los Angeles. The days bracketing the game typically represent one of the busiest periods of the year in the private aviation calendar. It's got hundreds of flights descending on the host city of Las Vegas and other surrounding cities, which also see a large boost in traffic. To ensure ground parking is available in those areas during Super Bowl 56 week, 13 airports have instituted a ramp reservation program for all arrivals and departures from February 10th through 15th, including drop-and-goes. In addition, all IFR jet and turboprop aircraft arriving to 13 airports in that surrounding area during the period are going to be required to file flight plans at least 6 hours, but not more than 22 hours, before the time of departure, and must use specific flight plans. On game day, the FAA is also instituting a temporary flight restriction enforced by NORAD beginning around 12:30 that day, and it's going to cover a ring extending 30 nautical miles from the stadium up to 18,000 feet. So it's pretty interesting how much like planning goes into these like arrivals and departures for Super Bowl. A lot of times you think of like, when you think of the Super Bowl, you think of like the game prep or like commercials and stuff like that. You don't really think about like all these people who have to fly in, which is pretty cool. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
The detail that the days bracketing the Super Bowl game day typically represent one of the busiest periods of the year on the private aviation calendar, I think is interesting, because clearly some really famous and really rich people are flying in for the Super Bowl.
I know, that is really crazy to think about. Like you think of like maybe some fans will fly like, you know, commercial, but like, yeah, you're right. Like all the celebrities and like athletes and stuff, like they're all flying private, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I hope they have a safe flight.
Yes.
Moving on to our next headline, United Airlines has an answer to the pilot shortage. They are starting their own flight school outside of Phoenix, Arizona. On Thursday, January 30th, United Airlines opened the United Aviate Academy, and it is a 10-month academy program. This is stemming from the well-known pilot shortage, and just to put some numbers to this claim, consulting firm Oliver Wyman said airlines worldwide need approximately 34,000 new pilots by 2025 to meet the growing demand and keep up with retirements. United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby says that traditional models will not meet this demand. And previously, the traditional models included looking to the military and requiring thousands of flying hours from civilian pilots. And the latter is very expensive and very time consuming. So it's interesting that they just decided to take the matters into their own hands and open their own flight school. The inaugural class of the United Aviate Academy is one of the most diverse pilot populations I've seen, in my opinion. 80% of the class are women or non-white. United's current pilot corps only has 19% non-white men. The article that I found also included a quote from student pilot Adela Gallegos, who had no previous flying experience. She said that she decided to go into this because she just started thinking of it in the last year. She said, quote, "This career has changed the way I've seen how my entire life is going to go." So best of luck to Adela and best of luck to this new cohort. This is a really exciting initiative put out by United Airlines.
I think that's such a surprising number too, by 2025, that about 34,000 pilots will, like, new pilots will be needed. I guess, like, when you think of it in terms of worldwide, it's not that insane, but I don't know. I guess I wouldn't know what number it would be, but that's not really what I expected.
Yeah, me neither. And 2025 is pretty soon. It's only 3 years away. So
I know. Yeah, exactly.
That was like a jolting statistic to me, right? Or prediction, I guess.
Yeah. Looking at our next headline, Alice, the first all-electric passenger plane, is preparing to fly. The Alice is a plane developed by Israeli company Eviation, and they went through engine testing in late January at Arlington Municipal Airport, just north of Seattle. According to the company's CEO, the Alice is just weeks away from its first flight. With battery technology similar to that of an electric car or a cell phone and 30 minutes of charging, the 9-passenger Alice will be able to fly for 1 hour and about 440 nautical miles. The plane has a max cruise speed of 250 knots or 287 miles per hour. Just for reference, a Boeing 737 has a max cruise speed of 588 miles per hour. The company, which is focused exclusively on electric air travel, hopes that electric planes that can fit 20 to 40 passengers will be a reality in somewhere from 7 to 10 years. Eviation has developed three versions of the prototype, a commuter variant, an executive version, and one specialized for cargo missions. The commuter configuration in testing holds 9 passengers and 2 pilots, as well as 850 pounds of cargo. The executive design has 6 passenger seats and offers a more spacious flight, and the cargo plane has 450 cubic feet of volume. The company says that all of this is possible while reducing maintenance and operating costs of commercial jets by up to 70%, which is quite a big number, especially when you're looking at stuff like maintenance, which gets pretty pricey very fast. So I thought this was, it was interesting to see, like, especially the different prototypes that this company is working on. Like, they're already thinking of different, you know, uses for this airplane. But I don't know, 287 miles an hour and only for an hour. I don't know how far you're getting.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, I've never heard of this company or the Alice. So regardless, I'm always excited to hear about new companies getting in the game.
Yeah, for sure.
And now onto our last headline, which is also about electric passenger airplanes. Joby Aviation, which is a company that we mentioned in our air taxis episode. If you haven't heard that yet, I would highly recommend checking it out if you're interested in this. Joby Aviation is in the early stages of planning flights in its eVTOL prototype over San Francisco Bay. They are confirmed to have filed an application with the FCC to temporarily use specific radio frequencies during flight tests. Earlier in January 2022, Joby added a second pre-production prototype, and the company says that this prototype can go 155 miles on a single electric charge. Joby intends to make public flights close to popular sightseeing locations in San Francisco, so I'm excited to hopefully make a trip to San Francisco and check out their electric aircraft in person.
I know, that definitely seems like that would be something cool worth seeing, especially the grounds in which they're, you know, actually doing this stuff on.
Yeah, I'm like imagining going to the Golden Gate Bridge and seeing one of these things like whizzing around.
That would be so cool, I know.
All right, and now moving on to the bulk of our episode. Today's topic is about Bessie Coleman, and we decided to feature Bessie Coleman because February is Black History Month, and we wanted to take this opportunity to feature an exceptional Black pilot. Bessie Coleman was born on January 26, 1892, in Atlanta, Texas. She was one of 13 children, and during this time, discrimination was rampant. Just one county over from her hometown, at least 9 Black men were lynched between 1890 and 1920. At the time, African Americans were barred from voting through literacy tests, poll taxes, economic reprisals, and terrorism. There was also still segregation in widespread society, so public transportation, schools, public facilities, etc. were segregated. Bessie's father was Native American and of African American descent. However, he left the family when Coleman was a child, so she was mostly raised with a single mother and her 12 siblings. In 1915, when she was 23 years old, Coleman moved to Chicago with her brothers, where she started to work as a manicurist. And this, I think, is really where her aviation journey starts. She started reading about World War I pilots, and that's how she gained her interest in aviation. And I think this is so relatable, too, because I feel like a lot of people's interest in aviation is usually very organic. It's never like, oh, like, you never really grow up. Like, you never, like, when you're 5 years old, I mean, I'm sure there are people who are interested in aviation, that their family members are interested in things like that. But I feel like for a lot of people, they learn about aviation later on in their lives, and that's how they really get into it. And that's what happened to me anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see how, like, especially in this case, how influenced she was by something that was going on, like, that wasn't necessarily perceived as a great thing. Like, obviously World War I was not great, but she, like, saw the jobs of these pilots and was like, oh, like, I, you know, I would be interested in that. So I thought that's sort of an interesting aspect of, you know, where her interest stemmed from.
Mm-hmm. And I think this point in her life too kind of gave us the first peek at her spirit, I guess you could call it, because pilots weren't really, like, they weren't really part of everyday life.
Right.
And they still aren't today. You know, it's not like I go flying every day in an airport or something.
Yeah.
But the fact that she kind of, like, took interest while reading about these pilots and decided to pursue it, I think that's a huge testament to her ambition.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And kind of compounding that, U.S. flight schools denied Bessie's entry because of her gender and her race. So she was basically like, okay, well, if you guys won't let me do it here, I'll go somewhere else. On November 20th, 1920, at the age of 28 years old, Bessie Coleman moved to France to attend flight school. She was the only student of color in her class, and she achieved her license in only 7 months, which is crazy. I can't even imagine doing all that in 7 months.
The other crazy thing about her move to France to attend flight school was when she moved there, she had to learn and, like, speak French fluently, because her flight school and, like, all her tests and instructors and all that stuff were French. So, like, I, like, that obviously speaks so much to her commitment to this. Like, she literally left this country, her family and her 12 siblings and stuff, to go somewhere else, learn another language, and, like, learn, you know, to fly. That's something that, like, I don't know, I can't even really picture, like, myself doing today. Like, I can't even imagine doing that back in, like, 1920.
Yeah, I was, I'll be honest, I'll admit, I was scared to study abroad because I was scared of going to school and having to, like, socialize and learn in a completely different language. And the fact that she did all of that in the 1920s and still finished her license in only 7 months is crazy to me.
Yeah, it is.
In June of 1921, Bessie Coleman becomes the entire world's first Black woman to earn a pilot's license. I do not speak French, but the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale issued her an international pilot's license. She specialized in stunt flying and parachuting, and she earned a living barnstorming and performing aerial tricks. So this is quite the departure from her initial job in Chicago as a manicurist, but honestly, when I kept reading about her, this way of living definitely fit her ambition and her excitement. It's just crazy for me to think about.
Yeah, that's a good point, given, like, her, like, the, like, her very unique upbringing and how she went about this. It definitely fits, like, her very well.
Yeah, for sure. So about 1 year later, in September of 1922, Bessie Coleman performs at her first air show. The Chicago Defender described her as, quote, a wonderful little woman performing heart-thrilling stunts.
Though, unfortunately, 2 years into her flight career, she survived, but it was her first major airplane accident. In February of 1923, her airplane engine suddenly stopped working and she crashed. She was hurt badly in the accident. She suffered a broken leg, some cracked ribs, and cuts on her face. Though, thankfully for her, she was able to fully heal from her injuries, and the accident did not stop her from flying. She was back performing dangerous air tricks by 1925.
That's some intense resilience, if you ask me.
Yes, definitely, especially like some injuries that sound pretty serious.
Yeah, a few cracked ribs, and then she just healed and went right back in the plane. That's insane.
I know, and she went right back to doing like tricks too. It's not like she changed her type of flying, you know, she just went right back to it. She eventually was able to save up enough money and she owned her own airplane, a Jenny JN4, and it had an OX5 engine. So I think that also says a lot for like the time period that she was not only a pilot, but she was a plane owner, which is pretty cool. I don't know if a lot, you know, at the time could say that they were. So that it was really nice to see. Soon she returned to her hometown in Texas to perform for a large crowd, but because Texas at the time was still segregated, the managers of the place that she was performing planned to create two separate stadium entrances, one for African Americans and one for white people to enter. This was pretty typical of the time period, unfortunately. Coleman, though, refused to perform here unless there was only one entrance for everyone to use. There were a lot of long meetings and back and forths between management and Bessie, but they ultimately decided, this was what management proposed, that if people could sit in segregated sections of the stadium but enter through one entrance. So Bessie finally just agreed for that. She figured it was at least some headway, and she agreed to perform. So it's nice to see that she was able to perform back in her hometown for, you know, her people, and sort of put her platform to some good use.
Yeah, that's what I love most about a lot of exceptional people in aviation. I feel like a lot of them aren't just like really good pilots. They also really do care about like advancing society and making a difference in their community and all that stuff. So even in, like, she was born in 1892 and Bessie Coleman still made it a point to make sure that she used her platform for good. And that was so inspiring to me. Like, not only did she endure her own hardships to just simply get a pilot's license, but she kind of kept on pressing on even after she got her license. She used her position and her performances to push for equality, racial equality. And she also, while she was pursuing her career, was working to start her own flight school for African Americans. And again, this is just a huge testament to who she was as a person. I feel like she's just, I'll say it again, exceptional.
She absolutely was.
So unfortunately, her career did come to a premature end. On April 20th, 1926, at 34 years old, Bessie Coleman died in an accident during an aerial show rehearsal.
Bessie was flying with a mechanic named William Wills, and Wills was piloting the plane, and Coleman was just sitting in the passenger seat. Though at about 3,000 feet in the air, a loose wrench got stuck in the engine of the airplane. Wills, who was piloting, was unable to control the steering wheel, and the plane unfortunately flipped. Now, at the time, airplanes did not have roofs or really any sort of protection, and she was not wearing her seatbelt, and so Coleman fell out of the open airplane and died. Wills also, you know, crashed the airplane and passed away as well. So sort of a sad ending there. And just like you mentioned, Kim, definitely a premature end to her career.
Yeah, and I can't help but wonder how much more good in trailblazing she could have done if this accident didn't happen. But at the same time, like, this was still a learning experience for the industry, I'm sure. We've come so far in terms of airplane safety too, and this was definitely a strong learning experience, I would say.
Yes, definitely.
But again, Bessie Coleman's legend lives on. In 1992, about 60 years after her death, the Chicago City Council passed a resolution request that the U.S. Postal Service issue a Bessie Coleman stamp. And this quote made my heart happy. The quote is that Bessie Coleman continues to inspire untold thousands, even millions of young persons with her sense of adventure, her positive attitude, and her determination to succeed. And that is definitely true. In the time that I spent researching this, I was like, yes, like, you're so cool. Like, thanks for everything that you do.
Yes. Yeah. The quote said it perfectly. You're right. Like, adventure, attitude, you know, determination. She had it all.
Yeah. It really did not seem like her motivation or passion for aviation ever wavered throughout. And yeah, she continues to inspire at least the both of us today.
Now moving into our featured photos segment, and a reminder that you can see the photos that we'll be referencing this week on our Instagram story highlights at abovethewing.podcast. Kim, do you want to walk us through your photo?
Sure. So my photo for this week is a magazine cover of Aviation News from January 2022. The most striking part of this is that the Airbus Beluga XL is the cover of it. And if you haven't seen this aircraft before, I think it's kind of cute. Hot take.
No, I agree. It is cute.
I like what Airbus did with the design of this. So I don't really think they intended for this to look like a whale, but it does. It just has a huge like bulb as a head, and then it has kind of this nose that makes it look like the head of a whale. And it's a huge cargo plane, essentially. And they put like whale eyes and like a whale mouth as like the paint decal on the plane. And I will always like share photos of this plane because I think it's really funny. And it does a good job at being a transport aircraft too. It's freaking massive. And then I looked... The longer I looked at this, I also saw a T-7A Red Hawk like on the bottom of the magazine cover. And I usually don't really see like a Beluga XL next to a sleek fighter jet like that. So yeah, I just thought this was an interesting magazine cover.
Definitely lots going on in this cover.
Yeah.
I love it. My photo is of a airliner flying over an In-N-Out burger restaurant. It's sort of funny. I found this photo on a blog. It's from this guy. His blog is called The Points Guy. And he started out his blog by saying, "I flew 2,600 miles for a cheeseburger." This iconic In-N-Out location is just north of LAX. And it's known as one of the best spots in the area to see airliners landing, as the restaurant sits right below the approach pass. So I just thought it was pretty crazy that, like, I don't know, just the juxtaposition of like LAX and In-N-Out.
Yeah, like a tattoo parlor.
Right. Like it's just like in the middle of the area. But yeah, I don't know. It makes you think of that phrase, like, you know, like the $100 cheeseburger, like people who go, you know, like flying for just like lunch and a cheeseburger. I thought that this had like the same energy of like, I flew 2,600 miles just for a cheeseburger, but like, look at the awesome views you got. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
So it sounds like we have to plan a trip to California soon. We have to see Joby Aviation's new electric plane.
Yep.
And then we have to stop at LAX and get some In-N-Out to see some planes.
Hey, I'll eat In-N-Out and watch planes any day.
Me too. Probably poor for our health, but hey, you only live once.
I think, and our wallets too.
Yeah, the burgers and the flight, I'm sure, will hurt our wallets a little bit.
That's okay, worth it.
True. All right, well, that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can find more Above the Wing content at abovethewing.podcast on Instagram, and we'll talk to you in our next episode.
Thanks for listening.